potatoes and molasses. If you want some, oh, just ask us. They're warm and soft like puppies in socks, filled with cream and candy rocks. Oh.
To show you.
My attention span is getting worse.
Same here. I can't commit to anything.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay.
Anyway, speaking of short form content.
That was good. I like it. That was good. My transition was, I don't even remember what it was now. That was actually really good.
Okay.
I totally blanked the other one from my memory.
Great. So speaking of short form content, let's go ahead and jump into this week's episode.
Yay, let's
Welcome
do
back,
it.
Everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, Anthony Fuentes.
Hey, it's me.
Wow.
I know.
What
I
happened?
Came in hotter also. I was...
You came in just like ready, but then I just brought the mood down, just venting about just a fuckhead. Anyway, we are talking about the ever whimsical, the fan favorite, Over the Garden Wall from 2014.
Yeah, I didn't know this was from 2014. In my mind, it was like, oh, it came out like last year, right?
No, I thought so too, but no.
Yeah, but also, before we get into the actual content, happy October.
Yes,
happy October.
Holy shit.
Huh.
It is October. You're getting a Switch this weekend.
Yes, technically that's true. This weekend when this episode releases.
Yeah. You have a long ways to go, buddy.
Yeah, we're way too ahead.
No, but this weekend you're getting a Switch, so mm-hmm. Congratulations to you. Welcome to October. Spooky season is in full fucking swing. We've already done some spooky shit ourselves, and yeah, we're very excited for that.
I know. We ended you guys off with a little Halloween preview with Pet Sematary 2, which is technically a Halloween movie, kind of.
Technically, this is also technically a Halloween TV show.
Yeah, that's true. I actually had no idea. Is this like a well-known show?
I think so. I think just how it ended up playing out is I didn't know about it because I'm not like very hip with the kids.
Yeah. Neither am I. It's not a sentence I've ever used, so yes.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I was going to say something stupid.
You're not jiving with the Utes?
Over the Garden Wall is totally on fleek or
whatever. You took it back real far.
2017.
That's exactly the year I was thinking. Okay, cool.
No, it is from 2014, and that is my freshman year in college, so I don't even remember what was popular that year.
Okay.
But I wasn't really exactly watching what was hip and happening on Cartoon Network.
Okay, so yeah, we're going to kick off our biggest month of the year with the 2014 children's TV show.
But when it is widely beloved.
Yes, no. This is a fantastic program.
And if
like,
you
it's
find
really
someone
good.
Who's seen it,
yes.
They're immediately just like, God, I love this movie, or God, or this miniseries or TV show. Like, mm-hmm. It is so good. Right up top, I know we normally don't do this, but if you have not seen this, it is on Hulu or HBO Max. Do yourself a favor and watch Over the Garden Wall. It is a miniseries. There's like 9 or 12 episodes.
Yeah, somewhere around there. I think it's only 10.
Yeah. Okay, right. I split the difference.
Yeah. The episodes are 11 minutes each.
Yeah.
They're 11 minutes
each.
So
if you watch the whole thing beginning to end, it's like just under 2 hours. Like, it is.
Yeah.
It is easy.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're fun. It's fucking fun.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Very digestible.
Let's dive right into it, shall we?
Well, before we do that, I just want to say, since it's October, you guys, you're in for a month
of
goodness. We have to it's October. It's not, this ain't another month. This is a big one.
This is the big one.
This is the big one.
Technically, yes.
Yes.
This is the month in question.
So.
For our entire genre.
Right? So just, you know, you're going to get your annual, like your every 6 month thing that we always do. That's coming
what
sooner
could
rather
that
than
be?
Later. I don't know, but this one's based in water apparently. So
great.
That's gonna happen. We're gonna be covering a new.
I just thought of like This is going to go totally over your head, but anyone who's in my age and also watched Disney Channel and was like, aw, it's like Halloween, just add water, which is a reference to a very silly mermaid movie on Disney Channel.
Okay.
Yeah.
No idea. None. But listeners, if you get it, I'm sure it was hilarious.
Yes, exactly.
It was amazing.
You wouldn't get it, but so clever. I got
my
it.
God.
You fucking genius.
And we're covering another beloved, actually, horror franchise.
Technically franchise.
Okay. We're also covering another new franchise in here. That
oh my god, we're actually doing so many, oh my god, yeah, quite yeah. a few franchises.
And then we're going back to the children's stuff, but a little more spookier than this.
We're going back. Okay.
That's true. We're going straight 90s.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of 90s, actually. Double 90s this month.
Woo! Wow. Hey. I mean, we do love our 90s.
We do. We just got back from the 90s from last week. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, there so, we go.
2014 is our modern... Well, actually, no. We have some other modern stuff, so it's
yeah,
good.
We have one other modern one.
Yeah.
Ish. Modern-ish. Yeah.
Ish. Actually, around the same time as this.
Oh, was it? I thought it was sooner.
It might be a little bit earlier.
Yeah. Anyways, no, we're just...
Two years earlier.
We're splitting hairs here, so...
We are, but it's around this time. 2 years... It was 2 years before this.
Good month ahead is coming in. Coming in hot. So...
So, all of this is to say we have a fantastic month of content planned out. We're very excited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk about it. We have a brand new guest who's never been on the show before who's going to be joining us. That's going to be awesome.
we're actually really excited about that guest. Yes,
it's going to be fun. And I hope you guys are excited to join us just as much as we are excited to take you along with us.
That's right. But for now, let's lead into this very well-acclaimed, you should totally watch this before even listening to this episode. Even though this could affect our numbers, don't care. Watch it before. It's on HBO Max.
Yeah, I mean, we are going to talk about each of the episodes, but, like, do yourself a favor. Like, get the whole experience. I personally, like, I'm so glad we're covering this in October, and there is the chance of, like, actual legitimate fall weather for whoever might be watching this for the first time. Because it was hot as fuck when I watched this. But, yeah, it's a very autumn miniseries.
Yeah.
I would say.
And it definitely is based in Halloween aesthetics and lore and the actual day, which is...
Vibes.
For sure.
Yes. Okay. So, without further ado, let's jump right in with... apparently, IMDb did actually have a synopsis for this miniseries.
Yeah, they have a synopsis for everything.
Everything.
Is it good, though, is the thing.
Yeah, I mean, they say, quote, two brothers find themselves lost in a mysterious land and try to find their way home, unquote.
Yeah, that's the baseline.
I mean, that is the bare minimum baseline of this, right?
Yeah, imagine, like, if that's how you describe the plot with no imagination. And this thing is full of imagination.
It is all imagination.
Yes.
So, this was created by Patrick McHale, which might sound familiar to some of you if you are, like, complete sticklers for Cartoon Network lore, question mark. This was based on Tome of the Unknown from 2013, and the story is by Amalia Lavari, Tom Herp. How would you say that?
Herpich? Yeah.
And Patrick McHale as the main story, I guess, creators.
Mm-hmm.
While Cole Sanchez and Burt Ewan did episode 9.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. That was the darkest one. Cool.
Yeah. And then the art director is Nick Cross, and the animation directors are Robert Alvarez, Larry Lichlider, Eddie Houchins, and Ken Bruce.
Okay, that's a team.
That is, yeah, it's a team. It's animation, right? And then the cast for this. we have a fantastic little collection of voice actors.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Elijah Wood as Wirt, Colin Dean as Greg, Melanie Linsky as Beatrice, Christopher Lloyd as the Woodsman.
Oh, he does great.
He does amazing. Jack Jones as Greg's Frog, Samuel Raimi as the Beast. They're not main cast, but I also wanted to mention Tim Curry and John Cleese are also in here as, like, guest roles, and they're fucking amazing.
Yeah, I remember John Cleese. I don't remember Tim Curry.
He's Auntie Whispers.
Which one? I can't remember Auntie Whispers.
She's the...
Oh, yeah! Okay, Auntie Whispers. Oh, wow. That was Tim Curry. Okay. And, of course, Elijah Wood and Colin Dean rock the house.
Yes,
in this
they're
one.
Fucking amazing.
They
you
are
know,
really good.
I did want to mention, didn't know this. I completely did not even occur to me this was Elijah Wood.
No?
The first time I watched it. The second time, I could not picture Elijah Wood.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was great.
No, it was like right away. I'm like, Frodo!
Frodo!
Yeah, immediately.
Yeah, okay, that's funny. Mm-hmm. No, it didn't even occur to me the first time I watched it. I was so, like, lost in the...
The whimsy?
Lost in the whimsy. I was going to say lost in, like, the Over the Garden Wall sauce, but yeah, I like how what you said better.
Okay, yeah, that's the briefer statement.
Right,
yes.
Yeah. So this originally aired November 3rd to November 7th, 2014.
All right, so let's get into a little bit of just what goes in, because this is actually, I'm going in blind on the whole production stuff, but I was pretty fascinated that somebody even thought of this stuff up. It's mm-hmm. very imaginative. All right, so Over the Garden Wall was envisioned in 2004. It was supposed to be scarier, and of course with a more adventure-based storyline. So I imagine if the episodes were longer, that'd be the case.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just like darker. It's a kids' miniseries, but anyway, yeah. I digress.
Before working as a storyboard artist on the Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack, artist Patrick McHale pitched the show in 2006, then known under the title Tome of the Unknown. The series would follow two brothers, Walter and Gregory, who, after signing themselves into a Faustian deal with a devil named Old Scratch. Scratch, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Journey across the land of the in-between to track down the pages of a book of forgotten stories. Again, very imaginative. All right.
I think this is whimsical as fuck.
Mm-hmm. McHale saw it as a possible Halloween special, but had trouble adapting the premise with a larger story arc. But after his work on Flapjack, McHale moved on to co-develop Adventure Time, where he served as creative director and subsequently as a writer for the first two seasons. And Adventure Time, I remember being, was gigantic in college.
It was huge. Like, everyone and their mom, like, had, like, yeah. Adventure Time merch.
The merch was very prominent.
Hot Topic made so much money off of Adventure Time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and it was one of those shows that, too, I feel like all ages was able to really like kind of dig into. Like it captured a lot of people.
Sure.
Did you not like Adventure Time?
It was fine.
No?
It was fine.
Okay, shit. I didn't touch a note on that one.
No, it's just like
it's Hipster Webster, it's fine. fuck Adventure Time.
No, I it was fine.
To be fair, I thought it was okay too.
So you're gonna give me shit? No. You're giving me shit?
I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoyed it in its time, actually. But it also didn't quite stick with me as much. But I do remember liking it, like, quite a bit.
It was fine. Like, I'm not saying it was bad. Mm. But also, there are people...
Oh, you came with the tone of, like, Adventure Time. Yeah.
No, I was just like, ooh. Because, like, there are people, like, still on TikTok that are, like, obsessed with Princess Bubblegum. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, is that true?
Yes.
Oh, see, here I am not knowing the TikTok fan base that we could potentially anger. Yes, I didn't know we were going to ruffle feathers with that.
No, they're, like, I would say certain characters. Because, like, mm-hmm. I don't think people follow the main characters as much, but, like, for example, Princess Bubblegum is, like, very popular for whatever reason.
Yeah, I remember her being kind of meme-y even back in the day. Yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway.
It kind of had the...
I'm not going to ruffle any Adventure Time feathers, but I can also see the very imaginative fashion that he kind of... McHale kind of got out of Adventure Time, and where he kind of, I don't know, it's a similar kind of vibe.
Yeah, I think you can see him develop skill set within it, and especially the first two seasons, which I would actually say were the ones that stood out. Well, and I remember it was a diminishing returns type of situation for me.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So that's probably where I land. I was like, I remember really liking the first two seasons, and then kind of being like, then it keeps going.
Yeah. It certainly did. But no, McHale with the first, Flapjack, I did not care for it at all.
I didn't see it.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. not in the same way that Adventure Time is fine. Like, I will never watch Adventure Time of my own free will. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, if it's on, like... like TV in like a waiting room, I'll watch it, but like I'm never gonna be scrolling through like Hulu and be like, I should watch Adventure Time.
That's
like,
gonna make me feel a thing right now that I want to feel. Yes.
Right, like I could not be bothered. Mm-hmm. That's neither here nor there. But what I was gonna say was, McHale, you can tell he has a formula that he uses, mm-hmm. where it's two characters going on some kind of whimsical or otherwise spectacular adventure trying to solve and figure things out. In this case, it's two brothers in Adventure Time. It is a child and his dog.
Yeah, that makes sense. At least I'm thankful this one has an endgame.
Yeah. Adventure Time is much more open-ended. However, as we'll find out, Mikhail wanted this to be a TV show. Like, an open-ended TV show.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Because, yeah, as you see right here, Cartoon Network later asked him if he had any interest in developing a full-on pilot, which led to him returning to the Tome of the Unknown, polishing it and pitching it again to the network. So not one to take no for an answer. But after creating a pilot episode, Tome of the Unknown, Harvest Melody, Mikhail and the network settled upon the miniseries format for the ensuing program, as Mikhail felt that it would lead to, quote, something that felt higher quality than what we could do with a regular series, which I am, again, thankful that he decided to use his creative energies on one thing like this.
If this had been an ongoing series, I feel like it would have been much less impactful.
Yeah, I think so too.
That's just my opinion, though.
No, I agree, especially since this has like a clear end to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it tells the story that it wanted to tell.
Yeah, and it doesn't dilly-dally too much. No. But when it does, it's fun as shit.
And the dilly-dally means something.
Yeah. So, Mikhail abandoned the original idea centered around chapters of a mystical tome, and the series title became, of course, what we've been saying this whole time, Over the Garden Wall. And
I love it.
Yeah, it's really nice. So production for Over the Garden Wall commenced in late 2013. Mikhail initially envisioned 18 chapters in the series, but the episode count was brought to 10 to accommodate budget and time constraints. Jesus. I knew it was 10.
It was 10. Good job.
Early drafts of... I did, like, just watch it also.
Did you finish it last night?
No. I finished it a couple days ago, but okay. I remember, like, I was like, oh, almost, like, halfway through, and I'm like, I have two more episodes. But it was one of those situations where, like, oh, it has to end? Aww. I want it to end.
But it has to. I will say it is a very, very fun rewatch.
Oh, I got it. Yeah. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to introduce someone to my niece, actually.
Yeah.
When the time comes, I should introduce
my sister to this.
Yeah, she probably fucking likes. She's very imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
So early drafts of the episodes from the show's Pitch Bible included a skinless witch character and a villain who carves dice from the bones of kidnapped children, which totally fits, as well as a running plot throughout four episodes in which Wirt and Gregory are transformed into animals. Gregory being a duck and Wirt being either a bear or a dog. Nobody can tell which is such a Gregory thing.
You mean a Wirt thing?
Oh, Wirt thing. Yeah.
Also, I had to Google this. Can you tell the audience what a pitch Bible is? Do you know what that is?
A pitch Bible?
Yeah.
It's just like...
Is it just like the rules? Lore?
Yeah.
So I had no idea. I was like, I've never heard this terminology before. And it was like an industry thing that I'm like, I don't know the clue what this fucking thing is.
Yeah.
But it's just like the rules and like the lore of a particular thing.
Well, kind of like when you're pitching. So you're like, oh, here's the pilot. Here's this. And here's the what we're going to adhere to going forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I was just like, I...
Pitch Bible. You got to pitch it before the series happens. And yeah.
Okay, I just had never heard it before.
No, yeah, it's a TV thing.
We're
here. We learned. We all learned together.
We all learned. And like, together. I surely would know any of that.
It's all one Google away, Alex.
No, I knew. I wanted you to explain it.
the more you know. So, when tackling the miniseries after the short, the team and Mikhail also had to try to maintain a balance between frightening imagery and... quote, episodes that are just light and funny, which they really nail both.
Which they kind of teeter-totter even in the episode. Like, there's some mm-hmm. moments in episode where I'm like, oh, this is wholesome. And other, I'm like, this is quite frightening.
Yeah, I think it has to do with this series really, one thing it does very, very well is subverts expectations.
So yes.
If you're expecting it to go a certain way, you think it's going to get darker, it usually actually turns into like a really kind of lighthearted, like, oh my God, they really put some heart in here. And then when it seems too happy... It's pretty fucked up sometimes.
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh, shit is hitting the fan.
It is going sideways.
Yeah. So for the music, Mikhail drew inspiration from quote-unquote classic American opera singing. The soundtrack for the show is one of the most requested. The mixtape for Sarah from episode 9, chapter 9, Into the Unknown, was available on cassette for a limited time. That's pretty cool. But now it's on SoundCloud.
Which I think is very cool.
Yeah. And the full soundtrack, on vinyl only, is soon to be released for a limited time. Executive producer Patrick Mahale actually unboxed it on his YouTube channel, which is a...
That's so cool!
Yeah, it's a very contemporary thing to do. The full soundtrack is going to be released on SoundCloud. So he's a very big supporter of SoundCloud.
The music of this is really cool.
It's amazing. The music is really good.
It's very, very interesting and awesome.
It doesn't sound like anything.
I'm very into the Sarah mixtape, which is such like a cute little thing anyway. That's mm-hmm. It's kind of like the reason that they're in The Unknown anyway.
Yeah, because Wirt being kind of a little bitch.
I mean, he is. We'll get into it. There's a particular moment that I was just like, oh my god, you sweet summer child. Mm-hmm. But we'll get into it. Yeah, I just think that's how they're kind of marketing, or how they marketed it,
mm-hmm.
is really interesting. And I want to go hunt down this for Sarah mixtape now.
No, yeah. I'm actually, because it is kind of left mysterious as to what actually is the contents of it.
All we know is it's clarinet and poetry.
Yeah.
Clarinet and poetry.
Oh, that's great. Nick Cross served as art director and Nate Cash as supervising director. Both worked with Mikhail alongside storyboard artists located in New York and Chicago. This distance proved difficult for Mikhail, who found it particularly daunting considering the idiosyncratic nature of the production. That was a mouthful.
Idiosyncratic!
Mm-hmm. The series art was inspired by a variety of sources, including the 1890s McLaughlin Brothers board game of Frog Pond, illustrations by Gustave Doré?
Sure.
For Cervantes' Don Quixote. Old illustrations for Hans Christian Andersen's story, The Tinderbox, and the Cheshire Cat illustration by John Tenniel from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
Good job.
And the Dogville Comedies short films. Mikhail referenced vintage Halloween postcards, magic lantern slides, and photographs of New England foliage to create the show's style.
And you can fucking tell!
Yeah, I think one of the best things it does to really give the vibe is the color tone for everything is perfect. It's perfect.
The tone, like the aesthetic, like you can tell he had a fucking vision. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he has like a list of all of these things, like you can tell he knew exactly what inspired this miniseries and like the look he wanted.
Yeah, there's no like saturation here. Like it's kind of it's muted in the most wonderful way.
But in
a very imaginative kind of way too.
I think it's very cool. Yeah.
Vintage. It feels vintage.
Yes. Like I would definitely would have made an edit with this exact like filter in high school, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Just to look like whimsical and like artsy. So
having Starbucks. Pumpkin spice season. That's me.
Yeah. Oh, so you like pumpkin spice?
We've been over this. I fucking love spice. Yes, okay. Every September we go over this.
Oh my god.
I lose my goddamn mind for pumpkin spice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's my hazelnut replacement now, though. No, the brown sugar is now. Because hazelnut is not
They're being
in stock.
Phased out?
No, they overdid it, I think. There's just no stock available. Not until January, according to my leads.
It's on back
at
order.
Local Starbuckses.
Yeah. My insider knowledge.
I ask
knowledge.
All the time. I ask every time. I think January. I'm like, thank God.
My insider knowledge. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I think, do we agree on peppermint mocha?
No, I hate peppermint mocha.
Okay, so we're on the
we're the opposite.
We're the opposite. Yeah, I love peppermint mocha. You hate peppermint mocha. You love pumpkin spice. I hate pumpkin spice.
Yes, that's where we're at. That okay. There's an episode in a fall episode sometime in 2019 or 18.
I'm sure where we had this conversation, but now
in a much bitchier mood, I'm sure between us. Like, no, how could you like the blah blah blah?
Right. Well, now we're a little older. We're a little wiser.
Yeah, and we obviously find different things to complain about now.
Right now, we can fight over other things.
Yeah, exactly.
You bitch.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now, but I'm sure it'll come up.
I don't know. Pineapple on pizza.
Yeah, I like it.
Me too. Okay.
Yeah, no, see, same brain sometimes.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't kill you.
No, if right.
Yeah, see?
No, it won't kill me. As long as it's cooked, I'm fine.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah.
Gets rid of all the
enzymes.
There you go.
Yeah, pineapple on pizza will not kill me. It is delicious, however, and I will stand by that.
I agree.
Anyway, bringing it back. Let's talk about Over the Garden Wall, shall we?
Yeah.
So the original short, Tome of the Unknown, was screened at the 2014 Santa Barbara International Film Festival.
Which is a fantastic short. Wait, is that the one you sent me?
Yes.
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 Yeah, that one is amazing. Uh-huh.
I believe so, anyway.
The YouTube one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm hoping that's the right one, anyway. So, at the 2014 San Diego Comic-Con, a preview of the show was screened along with various panels for other shows on Cartoon Network. Episode 2 was previewed at the 2014 New York Comic-Con, in which Mikhail and the cast attended. Oh, those good bitches. They should have been at San Diego, but that's fine.
No, it's fine, it's fine. They get something.
They get New York, which is fine. So the show did make its premiere November 3rd, 2014 on Cartoon Network and ran over 5 consecutive nights. The entirety of it was published on iTunes preceding its broadcast. Do you remember when you can still do this, but do you remember when people actively bought TV shows or episodes on iTunes?
Yeah, I remember because I didn't have iTunes, so I did it on... I didn't buy shows on it. I used the Xbox one, Microsoft Store.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So...
I used Microsoft Store.
I remember this because this is back in the day of iPods. You see, kids. back in the day, before they combined the iPod and the cell phone into the iPhone, you just had an iPod.
That's true.
It was crazy. And you would...
One's for this pocket, one's for this pocket.
It's crazy, right? and you would plug it into your computer, and you would buy stuff on iTunes, because you see, it didn't connect to the internet, so you had to plug it into your computer and put shit from your computer onto the iPod. And all my iTunes gift cards, I was like, what episode of Bones can I buy? And stupid shit.
Oh.
Anyway, this is just...
It was the immediate phase after buying full seasons of stuff on DVD.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like the step afterwards. It was like, just fucking put it on streaming.
I don't know why I'm talking about this like it's 2007, because this came out in 2014.
Yeah, that's true.
But I just...
Streaming was kind of kicking off at this point.
I know, I understand that, but just the thought of something being available for purchase on iTunes Store just immediately just drop-kicked me in the face immediately back to 2008. Like, I'm just like, oh my god. I bought music videos. Like, oh, I watched, that's how I bought, I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry.
Oh, Jesus. Just monetized everything back then.
They did. Mm-hmm. It was, anyway. So, the series aired on Cartoon Network in Australia in December of 2014 and in the UK on Cartoon Network and Ireland in April of 2015, so they had to wait a little bit longer.
Okay, sorry, UK and Irish listeners.
I know, right? So, Over the Garden Wall was critically acclaimed, and preceding its premiere, Patrick Kevin Day of the Los Angeles Times called it funny, creepy, and from the premise, not as simple as it sounds.
Okay, that is faint praise.
It's relative praise.
Not simple and kind of okay to watch sometimes. All right.
In TV Guide, and also before the premiere, Megan Walsh Boyle felt that the show's fictional universe, quote, sounds like a world worth getting lost in, unquote.
It really is. Yeah.
I think I would take a little mosey through, I guess. Meredith Warner of IO9. Do you know, are you familiar with this publication?
I think it had a phase of being relevant for a while.
Cool. Okay, yeah. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't...
It really died off.
I just didn't want you to be like, actually, it's I-09, or it's pronounced IO'd, or stupid. It's pronounced IO'd, Alex,
I'm pretty sure it's IO9, but I've only ever read it.
That's fair. Yeah. Like, that's my problem, is I'll read things and I never hear them said out loud, and it has gotten me into so much trouble. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Meredith Warner called a preview of the show amazing, weird and cute and great, reflecting, quote, all the things we love about this oddball animation renaissance we are currently living in, unquote. Oddball animation renaissance.
Yeah, they're not really good at putting sentences together, this IO9.
No.
Weird
Who
and good
is your
and
editor?
Great to watch and good oddball stuff we
and,
like.
And.
Yay. Watch show, please.
Conversely, amid... Amidi of Cartoon Brew.
That's not a real name.
No, it's a pen name. Of Cartoon Brew judged from the same preview that the animation was lacking. While not discounting its storytelling, music, and production design, he felt the production skimped on animation. He was still looking forward to the series, though, which I completely disagree with. But then,
yeah, way to get hung up on one thing. Well, Amidi, 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 Amidi.
You're a dick. What? No, but seriously, though, like, I think people were so, like, kind of, I mean, 2014, so people were, like, you know, caught up in, I guess, probably, what, at this point, 4D animation. Like, yeah. They're like, we want to be in it. They were like, VR this shit. And so, I think an animation style that might be a little bit more, like, plain. I mean, I don't want to call it plain because it is interesting, but, like, a little bit more 2D, I guess.
A little more classical.
Classic, yeah. Traditional. Yeah. Traditional is good. A little bit more traditional. They're just like, what the fuck is this shit?
It's like, where's all the bump mapping on the CG? I don't like it.
Right, exactly. In the New York Times, Mike Hale felt the writing was sometimes weak and the stories perilously thin, but concluded that Mike Hale developed an environment worth visiting. People are a little judgy.
I mean, this is 2014. It's prime, like...
Everyone's got something to say.
It's prime internet don't like things, so let's shit on things, because things aren't always good. Why can't we have happiness things?
I guess so.
There was a quote in Community, the show Community.
Mm-hmm. The show that you've also been telling me to watch?
Yeah, definitely. But I remember one of the characters was bitching about something, and then one of the analogs for the creators, he was like... Yeah, I guess I just like liking things. And it was a commentary on the way people in this particular era just bitch.
Oh, okay. They just like complaining.
Yeah, people liked complaining a lot in 2012 to like 15, people were just... It was height of bitchiness for the internet. And then 2015 happened. And, you know, then we heard the Mexican rapist thing. We're like, oh, it gets worse.
it gets worse.
Yeah. Yeah, so this Fair enough. Yeah, I don't know.
It's funny because on the flip side of that, on Twitter, which is a cesspool of a website to begin with, but there's this, like, I guess, argument of people critiquing something, like a piece of media, and then other people being like, let people enjoy things.
Yeah.
Well, people who are critiquing, like, there's this, like, idea that just because you're critiquing something doesn't mean you don't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. That's, I think, a more simplified version of what ended up happening in this era, which is, like, bitching for the sake of bitching.
Right, just complaining to complain. Like, some people just enjoy being haters. I get that.
Yeah. Very prominent. I can probably go back to Facebook memories and be... I remember...
And you be your own little, like... Ah.
Well, I remember complaining a lot about, like, why are comment sections such shit? I just want to enjoy something. That was my take for a long time.
Just avoid the comment section. I mean, that was, like, a big thing for a while. Well,
now I do.
Yeah. Like, unless I really liked a video, I do avoid the comment section. Unless... I know the comments are going to just be, like, a popcorn-eating, like, just, like, enjoyment.
Yeah,
like,
relish in this.
Let's all just relish in just, like, the clusterfuck dumpster fire this is gonna be.
That's why I go to Reddit for my comments.
Really?
Yes. For discussion, I go to Reddit.
So for me, it's Facebook. I love watching a good dumpster fire comment section on Facebook.
I can't do Facebook anymore.
No. I'm never on Facebook. If you see me on Facebook, it is almost exclusively because I'm reading the comments of someone's shitty fucking day.
Well, that's what I mean. I can't do the comments on Facebook anymore. It got too much. It got too much. Like, I don't know
what... But also, you, like, look for, like, legitimate discourse on... Like, were you looking for legitimate discourse on Facebook?
For a while it was. Now it's dead.
Okay, but that's the thing. It's like, I'm not looking to, like... I'm just killing my own brain cells at this point. Yeah, like, I'm, like, smoking crack.
Right? Yeah, there you go. Virtual crack. I get it. Digital crack.
Yeah, I'm smoking digital crack. Like, there's no plus side to this. I am not doing... Like, this is the most toxic thing I've ever done.
When I want to do that, I go to the conservative subreddit.
Ooh, that's good. Okay, see, if I was on Reddit, I feel like that's something I would do. For me, it's also, like, reading, like... Twitter threads that I know I shouldn't, like, just going through, like, reading the comments for anything is just, like, my toxic trait to a fault. Like, I just want to sometimes, you know, like, some people just want to see the world burn.
Yeah. No, that's I always find it funny because I'll go to the conservative subreddit and they're like, freedom of speech, blah blah blah, but they have the most restrictive rules and they will delete any comment that criticizes them. It's amazing because you can catch the dumpster fire early if you catch a thread early, and you can see, like, the fight going on, and then when the mods get in there, like, no, too many liberals in here, like, and then they'll be like, oh, freedom of speech. It's an amazing hypocrisy. I love it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But don't go. It will kill your brain cells.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Virtual crack.
Yeah, virtual crack. I agree. I can see where you're coming from now. There you go.
You understand.
Yay.
Yay. Okay, now that we've come full circle, okay, let's go back
to the praise.
So, Brian Moylan of The Guardian wrote that the visuals were, quote, absolutely stunning, and that the stories contained, quote, a certain darkness to it that is both mellow and twee at the same time, with a fair amount of anxiety creeping around the edges.
Okay, never heard twee as a descriptor.
No, so I've heard it, like, used as, like, a shortened version of Twi'lek for, like, a Star Wars character.
I don't know if that's what he was angling with.
Obviously
that.
Not.
No? Wasn't a little twee?
No. Twee, it's a British word for excessively and affectedly quaint, pretty, or sentimental.
So The Guardian, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
That's funny as hell. Okay, so now that we've
went through a lot of reviews, maybe we cut some of those out.
Okay. So now that we've dissected enough about the reviews, but now that we've dissected some British slang,
yes,
let's dive into Letterboxd with possibly our highest rating yet.
Wow, that's a good average. That's a very good average.
Over the Garden Wall has an average 4.6 rating out of 58,000 reviews.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So good for them. I was also worried this was not going to be on Letterboxd, and I was concerned, but
that's definitely on Letterboxd and definitely has a lot of reviews.
It does. So we're in good hands. So
this is the opposite of Cat's Eye.
I know. We're just going to crank through these real quick. Branson Reese coming in hot. If you don't like Over the Garden Wall, well, I hope you get hit by a car.
Hey. You know, we've used Branson Reese before, and I got to say, as extreme as that view is,
I disagree.
Yeah, dig it.
Seagull, trademark, with 4 stars. Quaint yet solemn, haunting and silly, a beautiful hodgepodge of graphic trends with a common aesthetic that is cozy and friendly but also sporadically unsettling. There is a purity in its dark fairy tale setting that comes from the simple beauty of the gorgeous visuals and the emotional center of two brothers trying to stick together through it all. It's touching, inviting, pleasant, and spooky. Knee likey, unquote.
Man, where was Siegel during the era of IO9?
Jesus Christ, right?
We could have landed a job there immediately.
User Cookie with 5 stars. Jason Funderburker, you're nothing.
He ain't shit.
And finally, User Lindsay with 5 stars. Oh, potato.
That's the song. I was trying to figure that song out.
Some, just ask us.
Oh, that was a good, wonderful song.
It was catchy as shit. If you just want just to feel like a hug from the internet as the antithesis of what we just discussed, just read the reviews for this on Letterboxd. They're really wholesome and quite funny.
Yeah, because it's a really wholesome and quite funny television show.
Absolutely.
That only had one run and only needed one run because it is really goddamn good.
So let's just dive right into some conversation, shall we?
Yeah, we were going to break it down, but you know what, guys? We're not going to do that. You need to watch it. Watch it. Please watch it.
Yeah.
Just watch it.
I mentioned it up top. I'm like, we're going to break it down. But no.
No.
Ain't nobody got time for that. I feel like this is going to be a shorter episode, but that's okay. That's because your homework this week is to go watch this on fucking Hulu.
Yeah. And I think a shorter episode works for something that has short episodes as its primary driver.
It's true.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Anthony Fuentes.
Uh-huh.
Thoughts on Over the Garden Wall.
Okay. We've already praised enough. You know that we're going to praise it. I'm going to go ahead and say, go a little deeper into my thoughts on this one. This show is for, the kid in every spooky person.
Yes!
In every spooky all of us people, all you fans here, we're all spooky folks. We all love our Halloween. It's a yearly thing for us. We go to Target, we look at the fucking decorations, and we've consumed media from, down from Goosebumps all the way to goddamn Rob Zombie. So, there's a range there. If any of that appeals to you, this captures the spirit and imagination of Halloween, of fall, just of childhood, and of, I don't know, there's something, and it's also dark, there's just something to this show that not a lot of shows do what it does. I would never be able to dissect that this came from the same person that worked on Adventure Time to that capacity. I wouldn't have pinpointed that at any point. It doesn't necessarily feel like it. Maybe that's just the concept kind of does, but the feel of it is really its own thing.
No, yeah.
It's, art.
Art, like the art style and like aesthetic, completely different, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't compare the art styles for sure.
Yeah, no, this show is art. The show really speaks to, I think, the spooky child in all of us. Mm-hmm. That and there's a level of whimsy and innocence to it that I think it's not matched with a lot of other content. It really isn't. There's nothing like it.
Also, anyone who is either the older or younger sibling.
Oh my god, yes.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah. As the older sibling who went through that kind of like a preteen gap of where you're becoming like, you're becoming older and the younger sibling isn't there yet. This captures that vibe, that total era of your life.
Yeah, for sure. Especially where it's just like you would literally kill anyone who looked at your sibling wrong, but also they annoy the ever living shit out of you.
Exactly. And they did things that you're just like, oh, you fucking idiot. Like
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I was definitely a wart. I was a wart.
You like were a wart.
I was 100% a wart. Like absolutely. Like, oh my god, what if they don't like me? Don't do it. Blah, blah, blah,
I
blah,
feel
blah.
Like I as a kid, I mean I probably was like, oh, actually, yes, I would agree with that. I also was a wart in my own way.
I was a wart since like 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to add, now that I've kind of grown up and kind of found my own, like settled into my own like identity outside of being an older sister, mm-hmm. I've leaned it into my own Greg, like I'm being a goofy little dork, like, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he is just like imaginative and goofy and just like dances to the beat of his own drum. Like,
he definitely dances to the beat of his own drum. Yeah.
And I, as like, I think as an older sibling, like kind of probably resented that in my younger siblings, kind mm-hmm. of being able to do that. But mm-hmm. now, like, you know, being able to explore that now as like an adult, where I'm just like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely admirable. And it makes work frustrating sometimes. But he never goes to the point of like, oh, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't go. He's still in an understandable frustration.
It goes both ways. Because it's also like, I'm like, I understand. Like, it's because Greg, I'm just like, okay, Greg, come on. Pull your head out of the clouds. Come on. Mm-hmm. We're in a sticky situation. Fucking act like it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it goes both ways. And then there's other moments where, and I think that's kind of by design, right?
Yeah.
Where, and then also with Wirt, same thing. Where it's just like, Wirt, I understand you're being a little bitch right now and you're mm-hmm. in your feelings. But I need you to pull your head out of your ass.
I need you to take it easy.
Yeah.
I need you to take it easy.
Okay, weird question. Have you ever seen Meet the Robinsons?
No.
Okay, fuck. This is going to also go over your head.
Sorry.
So, in Meet the Robinsons, the villain of the story,
uh-huh.
he's kind of talking about, like, this, like, story from the past. And he was like, and he's talking about, like, school. And he's walking through the hallways and he's like, they all hated me. And it shows all of the kids being like, hey, Goop. Hey, what's up? And it reminded me exactly of the scene where Wirt is so nervous and so insecure. He's like, I wasn't invited to this party. Everyone hates me. I can't go in.
Oh, that was me.
And then he goes into the party and everyone there is just like, oh, Wirt, you're here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, hey, how are you doing? And like, it's just that disconnect of like everyone thinking they hate you. And then you show up and it's just like. And even after they say this, after they're like, oh, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Wirt is still, like, petrified.
Yeah, he's making excuses. That whole, especially, like, the graveyard scene at the end in particular, when he's just like, oh, hey, no, it's my brother. That's why I'm here. I'm not here for genuine
any
company.
Other reason.
Yeah.
Right, and he could have just gone with them, and mm-hmm. it wouldn't, and no one would have batted an eye. And it's just, it's a very interesting coming-of-age tale. Because
well,
I think a lot of people go through that.
I think so, and then also, if you're an adult who has anxiety, you were that anxious kid.
Yeah, that's true.
I was that anxious kid that, like, so there were times when I always fluctuated between being, like, a fucking nerd and mm-hmm. just being kind of okay with people. But I was a nerd enough in my past that, like, that made me very apprehensive about hanging out with the cool kids sometimes. But then, when I did, it was fine. It was, I was just in my own head. But you know, you don't like yourself.
Mm.
Yeah. I didn't like myself.
And everyone, I mean, you're your own worst critic. You're like constantly, mm-hmm. you know, questioning, oh, fuck, did I say that wrong? Or did that come off weird? Or you're so
I'm such a dork. I'm such a dork.
You're so hyper-fixated on being misunderstood that, like, mm-hmm. you get in your own way.
Yeah, you get in your own way. That's
Which
definitely
is,
the way to
I've
put it.
I've been using that in therapy a lot where I'm like, I'm getting in my own way. X, Y, and Z. So.
Yeah, I think these characters are very good, like, distillations of that kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And having them on an adventure together is interesting because they both have to parlay with a lot of really cool and interesting side characters.
Yeah.
Like Beatrice to me was always a very fantastic character.
She's such a cool character.
Yeah. She's Beatrice, if you guys, you know, you should watch the show and if you're still listening anyways. She's the bluebird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the bluebird. I was like blue jay, but what was
a bird. Yeah, that
she's,
is blue.
She's a bird that essentially cursed her family to being like birds and is so kind of ashamed of like the way that that happened that she won't settle until she's fixed everything, yeah. Which is a total trait that I also happen to do sometimes. Like, no, I realize that I can confront these problems and just knock it out, but I'm not going to do that until I'm like perfect and, you know, it all works out my way. And then I can go, and then the situation just is the exact same had I had just confronted it early on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference.
Beatrice is a bluebird, by the way.
Bluebird. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But like you do look different.
Yeah. But you understand where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. That kind of like mental block that you put yourself through. She's a very good approximation of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And then it you know, it's just, yeah, like the don't come home unless you have a solution to this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, or don't address the thing until you know for sure it's going to happen your way.
Yeah.
And it never happens your way. It never happens your way.
That's something I found a lot of people with anxiety also deal with is they won't ask a question unless they know the answer.
Yeah.
Like, not in, like, a genuine curiosity, like, why is this the way it is kind of way, but more of, like for example, like, if I was at your house, like, I would not ask for a glass of water unless I knew you had glasses or I knew the answer would be yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. Like,
don't want to trouble and burden people.
Yeah, or even, like, I wouldn't ask you for $50 unless I knew you had $50 to give me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
yeah,
the, like,
and you'd be okay with doing it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
I have to know you would be okay with mm-hmm. with doing it, that kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. and I know a lot of people with anxiety have that issue where they don't like asking for things unless they know the answer is going to be yes, which defeats the whole purpose of asking.
Yeah, I think it goes back to. Like you're saying, it's anxiety, and when you're a kid, that often translates to, well, I don't want to be a burden.
Right.
I don't want to burden people with my own basic desires, mm-hmm. which are, like, the most, I don't know, like you feel like you're getting in the way.
Right.
And in reality, not many people care.
Not trusting that if someone genuinely couldn't do something, they'd say it.
Yeah. Exactly. It's interesting how these characters are very much approximations of that mentality, and you see it throughout every episode. Yeah.
Oh, every or even like the woodsman. Great example of just like grief.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Unable to let go.
Unable to let go
to the point where it gets manipulated.
Yeah. It's just it. All of these have very dark underbellies, if you want to look at it from a psychological perspective,
mm-hmm.
which I think is very interesting also.
Yeah, no, I agree. They're very layered characters, which I think...
so cool!
And such a simple premise, too. And I gotta say, the other thing the show does, we set it up top, but it subverts expectations really well.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, you're really not gonna know the direction which each story goes mm-hmm. into. Yeah.
So, obviously, my thoughts.
Yeah, let's see. How about you? What you think?
This is my second time watching it. This is another one of my October, different movie every day, which by the way, because we're in October, I'm doing that again this year.
Oh, nice.
So if you want, I'll drop my, Instagram at the end of the episode, but every day of October, I will be watching, something horror related. I haven't, because we're pre-recording this, I haven't decided if it's going to be a new horror movie quite yet, or mm-hmm. something that I haven't seen. When I say new, I mean something I haven't seen yet. I haven't decided if I'm going to do that again. I think I'm going to, because it was really fun last year.
Yeah, you get to learn a lot of different stuff, too.
And it forces me to, like, try something new.
Yeah, exactly.
So, check that out on Instagram. I had so much fun doing it last year, and it was a fun way to challenge myself, so check that out. But I did that last year for 2020, and that's the first time I watched this, because it came highly recommended from TikTok, actually.
Okay.
Caitlin also recommended it. Hi, Caitlin. She recommended it, and it was talked about on TikTok, mm-hmm. and I was just like, okay, I'll check it out. Best thing I ever did. I like got all cozy on my couch and like lit a candle and just like I just had the best time. It was awesome. So I love this.
Yeah.
It is like makes me nostalgic for something that I can't quite place.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I love good animation that makes me want to, like, go to the location that they're animating and just, like, throw myself into it.
You want to see more of the world, for sure.
Yeah, like, I want to see more of the unknown. Mm-hmm. And that's something that that they did very, very well. Like, there were so many stories and characters that they're able to, get across in 11 minutes.
I know, surprisingly. Surprisingly full arcs for 11 minutes.
Yeah, surprisingly. Yeah. And they're able, like, at the very, very end, everything is wrapped up in, like, this beautiful bow. Where,
oh,
like,
my God, yeah.
There's closure for everything. Like, very, really very, like, I don't think I have I don't have a single complaint about this miniseries.
Not one. There's a question here that says least favorite episode. None of them.
I have one, but
okay.
Like, and that just means, like, my least favorite, you know?
Yeah,
like,
it's like, not bad.
It's not bad. It's just my least favorite, but that's fine. So I cannot recommend this enough. And like I said, like, I don't have a bad thing to say about this miniseries. And if you have the chance to watch it and if you're at all interested by anything we've said, check it out. The Beast, amazing villain. So
the
good.
The tone, the voice,
the manipulation, just like all of it. I mean, you also have said most of the things that I also wanted to say. So,
how do you feel about the questions I didn't hear, but the ending? How it wrapped up and that kind of twist, because that's something that people are going to want to hear about as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so spoilers.
We already told you to watch it. If you're in your car, pull over somewhere, turn the podcast off, put some fucking music on, go watch it, come back and listen to our take on this ending, which does have a twist.
Yeah. So are you talking about how it's like they're kids from like reality or like...
Yeah, how they're pretty much almost died and that's how they're in the world.
Yeah. So I liked it.
Yeah.
Like, so if for more context, so the last two episodes are the strongest, I would say, in the miniseries, which makes sense because it ties everything together, right? But the ninth episode explains how they got there.
Yeah.
It explains how Wirt and Greg kind of and it exposes that they. Because the whole series beforehand kind of just implies that they're just trying to get home.
Yeah.
And that could be in the unknown. It could be, we just don't know. But the ninth episode confirms our kind of suspicions at this point that their home is like regular society.
Yeah, exactly.
And because they were running away from the cops, they fall into a lake and almost die. And basically, they're in the in-between. They're in the unknown. And that's how they end up in the unknown. And that's where this whole miniseries takes place. I loved it.
Right?
I thought it was super fucking cool.
I love that they get close to the border of death.
Yes.
They are right there.
I love that it's also this, like... is it all in their head kind of thing? And then at the very end, the frog has a bell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like confirmed that it's like, oh, this happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have the shared experience when they come out anyway.
Right. But also just like a little extra like, you got it.
Yeah,
like,
don't worry, guys. Don't worry.
But no, it was just a super cool, like, I hate horror movies. I don't hate. That's a strong word. Sometimes if it's not done well... certain horror and thriller films that do like the it's all in their head type things, if it's not done well, it kind of drives me nuts. I'm painting with a broad brush when I say I hate, because like, for example, Sucker Punch.
Yeah. It doesn't always feel earned.
But yeah, exactly. This, I was really worried that was the direction that they were going to go in, but it wasn't. It was legitimate. It was all real.
Yeah, but even then, I feel like the way they executed it is so much more, authentic. There's so much more finesse to it than a lot of other places that kind of, like, they just throw it in there.
Yeah, definitely.
This is not tossed in. This is almost alluded to. You kind of get the vibe, like, maybe there's something up like that. It's definitely, you get the morbid vibe. But then...
it's morbid, for sure.
When it occurs, it's... and especially it's done in the context of Wirt being, you know, Wirt. It brings it all together, I think, fantastically.
Yeah, it's great. Okay, so what's your favorite episode? I'm very curious about this.
I just pulled it up. So, to me, it would definitely be... I want to say... the second to last one is when he's at the party, right?
Yes, the ninth, episode 9.
Yeah, I love that episode. I love episode 9. I love episode 9, but I also actually really like... the one where in the... Oh, Lullaby in Frogland, where Beatrice betrays them, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah, I felt that kind of shifted the tone in a way that I wasn't expecting.
Okay.
And kind of really threw me for a loop. And I like it when there's that level of uncertainty at the end of an episode.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me want to continue. And I literally finished the series, like, within a night after that.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I, like, had to. No, not within a night. I finished until the last two episodes. And gotcha. Then the last two I save for myself. Yeah, because I'm like, I know it's coming, so I gotta do that. But I also, episode 9, really, it felt like childhood. Like me being an anxious little fucking dumbass kid. And they captured it so well. So both of those, to me, are fantastic standouts.
Oh, you know what? I am sorry, I am wrong. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry, you're right. Okay, never mind, we're good. I misread. For me, my favorite episode is, and it set the standard high, so I'm not mad at it, but the second episode.
Hmm. Which one was the second?
Hard Times at the Huskin Bee. That's when they go to Pottsfield, and it's like all skeletons
living
in pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love
that
episode.
That was a great one. Because
it sets it's in the beginning, so it still kind of sets the tone, and like you get some like very creepy, eerie, like, what's going on? And it makes you think that they're, like, digging their own graves for a good, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's where the subversion happens.
Yeah. And then it's just like, no, guys, we just wanted to see our friends. And then it's, like, it revealed that, like, the skeletons come to life.
Yeah.
And it's just, I love it. It's also this idea that, like, the pumpkins are sentient.
Yeah. It felt very Halloween-y also.
It did. It felt very Halloween-y. I love that episode.
No, that was a fantastic one.
I want to say it's probably I think it's my favorite episode. Because it was my favorite episode the first time I watched it, where I was like, this is so funny.
Yeah, it really sets the tone, too. Like, yeah. It totally does.
Now going on to the natural follow-up question. Huh? My least favorite.
Yeah.
Not
bad.
Not bad. Just my least favorite is Babes in the Wood, which is episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only the first half of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Is really the only gripe that I have. I just don't like dream sequences.
Oh, really?
It's just Greg's dream sequence. It loses me every time.
Interesting.
I think I was doing dishes, like, the second time. Like, I was just like, okay, I know what happens. Like, I really, like, it does nothing for me.
Oh, man, I actually like that episode.
I mean, not that I didn't dislike it. It's kind of whatever for me. I like the back half. Because
the back half is stronger.
Well, it's really emotional, right? Because this is where, like, Wirt finally realizes that he has done fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I would say that would be, in my opinion, my least favorite. But then we go immediately into episode 9.
Yes.
Immediately into episode 9. Which I love.
Yes,
I agree. It redeems itself immediately.
And it sets up episode 9 really well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed. What about you?
No, I don't have a least favorite.
Okay,
I'm not. I honestly.
You're like, I can't pick.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick one. I can't even. They're all. It's honestly, it's one of the most consistent shows I've seen. Like, it's just consistent.
Yeah.
Hard for me to even.
It's strong.
Discredit any episode. Yeah, comparatively, like, I just can't.
Again, and the only reason I dislike it is it's just personal taste. It has nothing to do with
exactly
like,
the actual quality.
It has nothing to do with the quality of the show or like writing or anything. It's just my own personal like, not my thing.
Yeah. Look at Alex's opinion on Freddy Krueger sequels for shit dream, not like in dream sequence.
Right? Or listen to my whole opinion on Nightmare Before Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Nightmare Before Christmas, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, if you mix those two, that'd be interesting. Jack Skellington versus Freddy.
That is a mix-up I do not want. Okay, so this isn't quite horror, but it is unsettling at many points during the miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, what makes those moments creepy or spooky, other than the fact that this does take place on Halloween? What about it, like, is unsettling or creepy to you?
Well, it's the creature design for everything. Gives it a horror vibe.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. And that would be fine and all if, you know, it was just a show. Like, oh, yeah, it's kind of gothy. The fact that the characters are in constant peril.
Yeah. Okay.
Like most of the time.
They are.
Yeah, they're always in peril. Which I mean
it's not like mortal peril, but peril nonetheless.
Yeah.
Sometimes mortal, but
sometimes mortal. But like some yeah, exactly that. Like there's this in between zone. Well, obviously they're in purgatory mm-hmm. kind of zone. So like they can go at any time. And mm-hmm. you definitely feel that. And with the spooky aesthetic and this really ace creature design that does have horror elements to it. I mean, it brings the creep factor when it needs to. And then mm-hmm. it turns it on its head when it knows you're at the point where it can delve into a horror-y aspect of it. So
I agree.
Yeah. That's my take.
Okay. For me, I think a lot of it has to do with the character design. And then also, there's like a hint of the uncanny in a lot of this, in my mm-hmm. opinion. Where it's just like, everything's just like kind of off.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of not natural. And, like, just off, just, like, enough.
Yeah.
That it puts you off and you don't know why.
Yeah, I would say that's probably with the environment design, I think.
No, agree.
It's a little more grounded than, like, the whimsy of the characters.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Hmm.
I was like, what does the beast actually look like? Because remember how we only see him for, like, a second?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't remember. I just...
So, okay. So, he's a shadow for the entire...
Yeah, for most of the... Yeah.
And then there's a moment where, like, the light flashes on him, and we just see, like, what he looks like for a second. And it's actually, in my opinion, the most unsettling scene in the whole miniseries.
Yeah, let me see. I can't remember what he looks like.
Well, you only see it for a second, but that's what he looks like.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. Yes, yes.
And you just see it for just, like... Not like a millisecond. Like it's like mm-hmm. it's like the demon face in The Exorcist. Like it is like there and gone.
Yeah, that's true. But
and it's one of those unsettling things that I love. Like just like those.
And they like threw it in there.
Yeah, same thing where in Ringing of the Bells or Ringing the Bell Ring. Yeah, the Ringing of the Bell. Mm-hmm. Where the girl Lorna. It, like, she turns into a fucking demon.
Yeah.
Real quick, and she's, like, chasing after them, and you have this very, like, zoomed-in thing of her face, and she's, like, demonic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very unsettling. So, I would say the direction and the character design and just, like, I don't know what the animation equivalent is, but the camera work.
yeah, it'd still be, like, the cinematography. Yeah,
cinematography, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Like, the framing.
Yeah, the framing, is fucking phenomenal and does a very good job of unsettling the viewer.
And it pushes the line sometimes when it needs to.
It really does. Again, I want my sister to watch this so bad. She would love it.
Oh, it would be cool.
Anyway, so we both watched Tome of the Unknown Harvest Melody, mm-hmm. and I'm curious about your thoughts on how it compares to the miniseries.
1-to-1. It is like you can tell the vision was strong from the beginning. Like that's a very strong vision of the show. It was honestly, if it was included in the whole episode thing, it'd be one of my favorites.
Really?
I loved it. I really loved it. Yeah, the whole goose thing.
Other than the animation being like a little off.
That didn't occur to me at all. I just watched it as it was and
interesting.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, there's I mean, I don't know what is the animation. Nothing seemed off to me. Like in any of the episodes, none of this stuff, nothing. It was kind of perfect, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of perfect.
Kind of perfect. And I would say, you know, Tome of the Unknown is also kind of perfect. It fits within the same realm for me.
I liked it a lot. Yeah. I don't know if I would necessarily go that far as to your level, but I did enjoy it. It was cool.
Yeah. It fits. It really fits with the rest of the series.
It gives a great... introduction to the universe
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Yeah.
I did enjoy that a lot, but yeah. If it had gone in, I don't know how well it would. Well, obviously it's a different storyline, so mm-hmm. you know who's to say. But I did like the story that we did get with the guy going to the city
and trying to find a girl that he can settle down with. And then they end up leaving like, city's too busy.
Like, we're going to settle down elsewhere.
Yeah, back at the farm. No, it was nice.
It was cute.
And it's on YouTube, guys. So
it is.
Yeah, if it's not included in the rest of the series on HBO Max, just watch it. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, same length of time.
I think this and the first episode of Over the Garden Wall is on YouTube.
Okay. Well, so, then
check
go give it a shot, people.
Okay. After that, I'm curious. Anthony Fuentes, what incident lands you in the unknown?
Oh, shit. And since have almost landed me in the unknown anyways. I do one bitchy turn. One LA moment where I'm just mad. I'm like, oh, this fucking truck, I'm blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, cool, whatever. I'm going to get in the next lane, not worry about this. And it's not really a lane. That's what gets me.
Oh, no.
It's not really a lane. I'm like, And then we got to figure it out from there.
All right.
Yeah, that's me. I can, yeah.
Okay.
Based on my history with near that death experiences, just recklessness.
Yeah, LA driving.
yeah. Might not be my fault, but in this particular instance, I feel like getting into the unknown is partially your fault. That's why you're there.
Okay.
So that'd be it for me.
Okay.
How about you?
For me, since we're going partially our fault here, edibles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Like, whoa, her heart rate went fast. That's a very, like, hope she calmed down.
I know, she better calm down, because otherwise it is not looking good. This might be the first edibles-related death.
See, and my heart rate's going up because I am just that mad.
No, yeah, edibles. I think I would go too hard on an edible, and I would be couch locked, and then I would just be like, I need to think about anything else, and then I would just be gone.
There you go.
Body would be here, my mind would be in the unknown for a couple hours at least.
For a little bit. And then you know what? You'll wake up, and then you'll get yourself some potatoes and molasses, and you'll be fine.
I know what
all
the
with the munchies.
I know what the opening to this episode's gonna be.
There you go.
Okay, I think we both know the answer.
Yeah,
and I think we're in agreement here. But
you want to same time it?
Sure. Okay, so rate this miniseries out of 5 rock facts.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Five rock facts.
Yeah, this is a 5. This is a 5.
Yeah,
this is like a hands down 5. Like one of the easiest 5s.
Yeah. Like I said, there's not, like, I can't find anything wrong with this.
Nah, me neither.
And I don't want to. Like, like I said, there's something so, like, whimsical and, I don't want to say childlike, but there's something, like, wholesome about it.
Mm-hmm.
in the way that it's wholesome for, like, a horror fan.
Yeah.
That I don't, like, there's nothing that makes me want to, like, pick this apart.
No, definitely not. I mean, the only way I'd pick it apart, just analyze it piece by piece.
Yeah,
with multiple viewings.
It was just like, oh, like, I love this so much, I just want to watch it so I can, like, pick it apart in, like, a good way. Not in, like, a, I fucking hate this movie, I'm gonna hate watch, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But this is, like, we keep saying it, but please do yourself a favor and check it out. Like, very rarely do we give it 5. Very rarely, I don't know about Anthony over here.
Yeah, no. I remember I had him out like candy, so yes. Like Halloween candy, like, bam.
Fuck you. I don't give out 5s very often. I think I've only given out, like, maybe 6.
Yeah, I think that's a good number. I've probably given out, like, maybe, like, twice
10.
That. Yeah, about twice
10
that.
Or 12, yeah.
But one of the easiest 5s of the show, mm-hmm. to be totally honest with you. This is...
No hesitation. No, like, maybe this is a 4.7. No, it's a 5.
Nah, it's
like,
a 5.
It is, like, yeah.
It's a 5. Go watch it. Watch it on HBO Max. If you don't have HBO Max, go find the DVD somewhere.
Yeah, I need to check and make sure that I'm not, like, completely negating what I said back in 2020.
Right.
Because when I one of the things that I did when I covered this or did the back in the day the horror challenge is I on my Instagram stories, which is another reason you should follow me on Instagram. Every single day for each of these movies that I'm watching, I do a little mini review.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah. So okay. So, I said about Over the Garden Wall, I gave it a 4 out of 5.
Oh, shit. Well, you watched it a second time.
It's
so,
true.
Yeah.
And I think I also was just being, I was going through a lot last year, so I think I was just being a nitpicky little bitch.
Kind of pandemic, you know?
Pandemic, other shit.
Yes.
But, I said that this is literally so dreamlike and kind of uncanny, but also comforting and the immaculate Halloween vibes. For a children's television show, 4 out of 5.
Mm.
But also just like as a general, just love, like, lovely Halloween watch, it's a 5 out of 5.
No,
like,
I agree.
I don't know why I gave it a 4 out of 5.
You were going through some shit. It's fine. It's fine.
Anyway, I've revised my take.
Yes, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a 5 out of 5. So that is it, I think, unless there's anything else you would like to add.
Nah, happy Halloween, folks.
Yeah,
it's
happy
time.
Halloween.
It's time.
This is Halloween.
That's
this
right.
is Halloween.
We
Halloween.
Are.
Halloween.
I was going to go somewhere. I don't know. My mind's torn. I kept thinking about the show. So,
No, so we are so excited to be doing, you know, so many cool things this October, and yes. I'm so excited to have you guys along for the ride. So that was Over the Garden Wall from 2014, created by Patrick McHale. Next week, Anthony.
It's gonna be a spooky time with our boy Phil. He's gonna come in. Phil only comes in for very specific episodes. This is a franchise we've debated many times with him on Instagram and on the show. And we're coming back to it again.
So exciting.
And there's a new release of it coming out this month. Oh my
yes.
God.
Oh my gosh, there's so much
going
on.
How could we not cover it? So you guys probably know what it is. It happens every Halloween. It's the namesake of the holiday. And
yeah, we're excited. And obviously it's always so fun to have Phil on the show. So.
And also, you know, just as another hint, Alex's cat is giving it away. She is drinking some high quality H2O.
That's some high quality H2O.
That's right.
So thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. If you like what you heard, please want to, you know, help other people find this podcast, which mm-hmm. would be fucking stellar. You can subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you subscribe on Spotify, they give you really cool little notifications whenever there's a new episode.
That's right.
Which is nifty. And you can leave a 5-star review and write us a review on iTunes if you feel so inclined, if you're an Apple user. Mm-hmm. That would mean the absolute world to us. You guys are the fucking best, everyone who's done it.
Somebody did recently.
Yeah, we're up to 30. We're at 27, so yay!
Keep doing it.
You guys are the best. And then if you feel like we deserve a couple bucks for what we're doing, we do have a Patreon. This is a relatively new development for us. If you want, you can head on over to our Patreon. It is patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod. And we are also on all the other social media bullshits. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod as well. And we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast.
That's right.
You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. Like I said, I will be continuing my October, I guess, horror challenge. Yeah. I'm really excited to be doing it this year. Last year was really fun, despite my own mental bullshit. So,
yeah.
Very excited for that.
And I am just living the good old LA life, and you're going to see me at some spooky bars. So
many spooky bars. I'm so excited to hang out, because we have to get our Halloween, you know, before Halloween.
Yeah, no, we got to make it happen. Yes.
So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Potato, Evelyn.